From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when an MCC student jumped on Twitter last Thursday to complain that someone had damaged his Confederate flag. I'm going to quote from the tweet, but I'm going to use the word blank to signify a racial slur, and it is sadly one you've heard many times. The tweet read, quote, "Shout out to the blank at MCC who vandalized my Confederate flag. You'll be a white man's property soon enough. Give Trump time," end quote. Initially, students on campus expressed some outrage at a lack of discipline carried out against the student, and the discussion moved to several fronts. Is this a case of free speech? What are the limits of free speech? What discipline is appropriate, and what discipline should be considered appropriate for a case like this? Two public forums this week have demonstrated just how much this incident has impacted the local community. Professors have spoken out, calling for a much stronger response. Students, too. MCC President Ann Kress delivered a special message after the forum, saying she is listening, she wants to communicate the steps MCC is taking, and they care deeply about this issue. And this hour, it's a chance to hear from her and to hear from some other voices and leaders at MCC. This issue also is about one student at one local institution, but it is also a broader discussion of what free speech means, how we respond to that kind of speech, what can and cannot be done about it. Let's go ahead and welcome our guest for the hour. Dr. Ann Kress is president of MCC. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Also here is Lloyd Holmes, the vice president of student services and chief diversity officer at MCC. Lloyd, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also here is DeMario Brantley. He's a sociology professor and a Latin American Academy fellow at MCC. DeMario, welcome to you.
A pleasure to be here.
And Daniel Skerritt is president of the MCC Student Events and Governance Association. Daniel, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Well, this has been an emotional issue. And I want to start with Dr. Kress, but I'd like all of our guests to kind of weigh in on their first reactions to how they sort of heard about this. And then, if you could, Dr. Kress, take me through what the process is, because you can't read every MCC student's tweets on Twitter. You can't read every post on Facebook. But clearly, when this lands on your radar, is this a case of saying free speech is occasionally lead some ugly things, or do you say that sounds like a threat? Do you call law enforcement? Do you call other management? Take me through the process of how you heard about it and what happened next, and then we'll have the rest of the panel also characterize their response.
Sure, absolutely. So I had been out of town at the Association of Community College Trustees annual Congress, which was held actually in Las Vegas just days before the horrific shooting earlier this week, and was returning home when I got an email from Vice President Holmes, and that shared that we were seeing a lot of chatter on the internet, and actually had emailed to us this tweet. So it was nothing that we probably otherwise would have been aware of. As you said, we don't scan every student's tweets or emails or postings, and I think that's something that I want to come back to as well. So we had a discussion. We shared the same viewpoint, which was that this was hateful speech. It was offensive. It was abhorrent. But at the end of the day, this student has the right to say those things. And so that's where we initially were. Now, what happened over time was that this statement then started to create a real concern about harm in the college community. And at that point, then it moves into student disciplinary processes. And so that, I think, is where we are right now. And certainly we can't share anything about that process.
You can't share because this is an individual student, and there are rules on what you can and can't say about discipline. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Chief among them, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, FERPA, which safeguards all student information. And we, as a practice, do not speak about disciplinary matters of our students or our faculty or our staff, employees. Those are processes that need to be allowed to go through those steps.
Okay, but I do want to at least clarify for the audience that given the sensitive nature of this tweet, and given the fact that unfortunately in this country we will see probably similar, whether it's at MCC or elsewhere, we're going to see more of this.
And
there's
some
ugly
already stuff.
I think it's going to be fair to at least ask you in the future if this is going to be the kind of thing that could lead to discipline. I don't want to sort of play a shell game and get you to reveal what the discipline is, but I think people want to know if your initial response to this was, unfortunately, that's free speech, has changed, has said, maybe we were wrong about that.
And here's where I'm going to say something that probably will disappoint many people, and the answer is no. And if you go back even to the American Association of University Professors, they were very clear in the mid-90s, really when speech codes and the notion of hate speech started to enter into our discussion, that as vile and disgusting and hateful as some of these comments are, we cannot regulate speech. We can regulate actions. We can regulate behaviors on college campuses. And certainly you have seen this across the country. The Chronicle of Higher Education this week is all about freedom of speech on campuses. And so one of the challenges we have then is, when does speech cross over into conduct and into behavior that begins to harm the learning environment? And as the president, that is my responsibility, to safeguard that learning environment. Having said that, I will say that one of the action steps we're taking, because, and I want to go back to the notion of social media has really been a game changer in positive ways and in very, very negative ways. Students are often completely unaware of the ramifications, and not just students, but also employees, of what they post online, how long it lives. The student in particular tried to delete the tweet and take his account private. It is too late by that point. Everyone knows it's out there, and it grows, and it goes viral. So we'll be looking at our own codes of conduct, both for students and for employees, to see at what point do we want to start policing or regulating what students and faculty and staff and administrators post on social media, in as far as it intersects with the business and the learning environment of the college.
Vice President Holmes, do you agree with Dr. Kress here that we're in a position where this is a case of uncomfortable, ugly, even hateful free speech, but that's what it is? That's the category this tweet is in?
Yeah, I think that you know, as President Kress indicated, you know, while she was away, there were several emails that initially came to me about the posting, and they weren't from individuals that were from MCC. These were individuals from institutions like SUNY Fredonia, and so when we look at a student's off-campus behavior, we look at whether or not this behavior has had a direct impact on the college campus at that point. And when we initially received this information, we were getting absolutely nothing from individuals on our campus. Everything that we got was from someone who was not connected to MCC, who were just alerting us that an individual in the community had said this. And so as a result of that, you know, as the president indicated, you know, I said to the president, and we both agree that this individual exercised their freedom of speech. They were the notices that we received were not from individuals that were connected to the campus.
Okay, but then you saw in the last couple of days, didn't you, mm-hmm. that on campus that there is a reaction. Mm-hmm. So the implication I'm hearing from you is that a lot of the buzz was outside of MCC, but MCC is feeling it, aren't they?
Well, I think that what happens is oftentimes, you know, things will happen off campus, and there's a lot of buzz. Well, then once it comes to campus, then we have policies and procedures in place that we have to follow. And as an institution, that's what we have done. We drafted a code of student conduct a couple of years ago. We revised our code just so that we could afford everyone due process rights. And so initially, as an institution, we don't ignore our policies and procedures, and we don't fail to provide students with due process rights. And so as things moved on, you know, as days passed, certainly it came to the campus. It certainly had an effect on the campus. And so we follow our processes that we have in place, okay, and respond appropriately.
And according to President Kress's special message after these public forums, she writes that Vice President Holmes has met with that individual. You've met with the author of that tweet, yes?
I can't say that.
Okay,
yes.
And so I guess what I don't fully understand is, if the decision among MCC leadership is, we don't condone or support the message, but this is a case of free speech, then why even meet with that person? I mean, there's a lot of tweets out there that are sort of ugly. Why are you meeting with someone if you don't think that this is outside the bounds of free speech?
Because the question that we have to ask is, has this had an adverse impact on the college? And if we, you know, we don't automatically meet with individuals saying that we're going to take disciplinary action, but we do have to follow our processes. And if we see that an event has had an impact on the college, then per our code of conduct, we have the right to meet with an individual, mm-hmm. discuss the issue, and then make decisions as appropriate.
Okay.
And if I can just jump in there, one of the things we've been looking at, and the phrase I've been using, is how far does the arm of the college reach, if you will? Does it reach into a student who lives in his or her own home away from the college? Does it reach into that house if that student were to say something offensive? Does it reach into their workplace? And our code of conduct says that the arm of the college extends beyond the boundaries of the college when something occurs that poses harm or a risk of harm to the college community. And at a certain point, it became very clear from the responses of our community and the responses of others that this was posing harm or a risk of harm. And so the arm of the college reaches further.
Okay, so I'm hearing two things, though. I'm hearing you say that this tweet ended up posing harm, but also it's free speech and there's mm-hmm. not much we can do about it.
Correct. So, you know, what I would say is let's take these as two separate issues. And one is that students, faculty, staff, employees, individuals in this country have a First Amendment right to say whatever they wish to say, right? As vile or as ugly as it may be. Right. They have a First Amendment right. But we also have an obligation to protect the safety of our college community. And so that right,
sure.
and they're exercising that right, may at some point impact their ability to access this particular community.
But it doesn't sound like you think this particular tweet rose to that level.
Not when it was initially sent, but clearly there have been actions since that point. And so, you know, I'm sure there's other things that we want to talk about here this afternoon, but we have a disciplinary code of conduct. It has steps, due process rights for the students involved. Then at the end of that, there's even an appeal for students who may not feel that they were adequately served by this system. And so we have an opportunity for a student to engage in that process.
All right, let me ask our other panelists here, and I'll ask Daniel Skerritt, who's president of MCC Student Events and Governance Association. When did you first learn about this, and you know, how do you view your role in this discussion on the MCC community?
I first heard about it actually Friday. Mm-hmm. I received a message, a text message from another student that snapshotted the picture and sent it to me. At the time, I was dealing with student government meeting, and my mind was all over the place. And honestly, initially, I did not respond to it as quickly as I should have. In my role as the president of the student body, I believe this is a matter that needs to be addressed, and it's very serious because overall, the larger population of the school is affected by this, and it needs to be addressed.
Okay, and are you satisfied with what you've heard from the leadership at MCC? Is it being addressed the right way?
Initially, I did have some issues with the response. However, now the student is going through a process and something is being done. So at this point, yes, I am okay with it because something is being done.
Okay. And let me ask DeMario Brantley, who's a sociology professor who has raised his own concerns about how this is impacting. You heard Dr. Kress say that, yes, it's a tweet, but it has the potential to do harm. Has it done harm?
Absolutely. I would say that it has done harm. I first was notified of the tweet on Friday. A faculty member at MCC actually shared it with me, and they shared it with some others in the department. So we were talking about this for sure. Some of my students, not everyone in my classes had known. I only met with two classes on Friday, but a significant number of those students were aware of what was happening, and they were sharing it in the classroom as I walked in. When I first saw it, I'm originally from Georgia. As a child, I grew up standing with my hand over my heart to a flag that was a Confederate flag, and I'm using and saying words about freedom and sanctity and respect, And all I can think of with this flag is how it directly impacted my family, you see, because I can only go back to 1869 for my family, because that line of thinking from that particular student, that was a total institution in this nation. And so I cannot simply say he has free speech. Of course he does. And I would respect that right for everyone. But you do not have free speech at the cost of subjugating or compromising any of the Brown students' respect. And that is the difference.
Are you satisfied with the response of MCC?
I'm interested, and I will be following. But initially, I was not very satisfied. There were communications that came from the administration over the weekend, so that did occur. However, it was a little convoluted. We did have a video on Spectrum News of President Kress kind of talking about this topic, and she did address it and condemn the language as hateful. But I really think that we have to go beyond scratching the surface and not play linguistic games. It's not about words. This is about a lived experience for people.
All right. Before I get to some of your phone calls, what I want to do is just make sure I understand. And there are certain things that MCC leadership can and can't say about this particular student in this incident. My job is to ask you, and you can say you can or can't answer. Is the student going to be disciplined, or is the student being disciplined?
The student is going through the disciplinary process. And here's what I would say to anyone listening, and certainly we've talked about this in the forums, and there has been a powerful statements of pain and challenges. And one of the things we have heard very clearly is that the words in this tweet were so very impactful because they touch lived experiences of our students, of our faculty, of our staff every single day that have nothing to do with this tweet in particular, but have everything to do with the message that it conveyed. So having said that, what I would say is it was a very public statement. And so people want a very public response. But we can't do that. And we can't do that because we, you know, what is that saying? Hard cases make bad law, right? We can't break the practice and the rules for this student because we protect the rights of all of our students, even if they do things that we find reprehensible.
Is it possible that a tweet like this could get a student removed from MCC?
It is certainly possible, and that's part of what the disciplinary code, which falls underneath student services, and we have a panel that reviews this, a panel that does include students, that is representative of the institution. It is certainly possible.
When you see a tweet, and again, listeners, if you're just joining us, the tweet in question was written last Thursday, including a racial slur, and the person who wrote the tweet wrote, quote, "Shout out to the blank at MCC who vandalized my Confederate flag. You'll be a white man's property soon enough. Give Trump time," end quote. Does that, in your mind, rise to any level of a threat? Or is that too broad to be a threat? And do you bring law enforcement into play with that?
We certainly did engage our public safety. It is not a direct threat against any individual. But having said that, I'm going to also say that it's very clear that people took it as personally threatening. And again, it's because it represents an ideology. It represents a frame of reference. It represents a way of thinking that, to Professor Brantley's point, has subjugated millions of people, and that we don't need to look very far from this very booth to see the impacts of it in our own community. And we've heard that from our students.
So what I want to do in a second is turn it over to your phone calls, but I've got one more question sort of on the broader issue of speech. And then we can also, in our second half hour, work through some of what Dr. Kress said in her special message on this issue that MCC is already undertaking. And that includes things like looking at diversity on your own staff, all of those issues that foster inclusion and representation. So that's part of it, certainly. But let me read a little bit from a blog post that Professor Athesia Benjamin wrote, because this is where the question on speech comes in, where people are saying, well, where's the line? And maybe we don't know where the line is. Maybe some people think there really is no line. Others think you have to look case by case. You can't say the Confederate flag is where the line stops, because what I might say about the Confederate flag one day is different than what someone else says and the manner in which they say it. But here's what Professor Benjamin wrote. Quote, "I learned of the tweet Friday night. I had no doubt that MCC would use this opportunity to send a message to all students and to the greater community that derogatory racist language and allusions to reviving the horrific institution of slavery would not be tolerated. Instead, it would seem that as though The writer of the tweet, and his name is Will Forberg. Mr. Forberg's right to free speech is paramount to the comfort and well-being of our ethnically and racially diverse student body. I am of the strong opinion that the First Amendment should never be twisted in meaning to protect hate or genocide speech or hate speech that glorifies slavery. And she goes on to say that choosing to not discipline this student is essentially winking at racism, bigotry, and white supremacy, and this decision has the potential to hurt such a vibrantly diverse community, end quote. I assume you're all aware of her writing on this. So Dr. Kressa, just briefly here, when she says she thinks the First Amendment should not be twisted to protect hate or genocide speech or hate speech that glorifies slavery. In other words, that's out of bounds. Free speech does not cover that. Do you agree with that, or is that too broad a statement?
Well, I think the Supreme Court does not agree with that. The Supreme Court actually heard this issue and found that there was no hate speech exclusion to free speech. And the American Association of University Professors in their 1994 statement came right out and said, look, people are going to say things that are vile, are disgusting, are ugly. And we as educational institutions should use that as the moment to engage individuals in discussion and dialogue and understanding. My concern, and I have shared this in all forums, is that this was not a student who had just walked onto MCC's campus 4 weeks ago. This was a student who has taken 12 classes at our college. And my call to the college community, to faculty, to staff is, where did we fail to live out our values for this student? Because if we've done that, we have failed all of our students. If someone can take 12 classes at my college and walk out and think that this is a perfectly fine thing to write, that they have been in classes with students like Daniel, like all of the students who stood up in the forum, and they think this is a fine thing to say. And I think I'll find a lot of support for this.
Isn't that a little idealistic, though?
Well, I am idealistic. I work in higher education.
The guy who wrote this tweet is not a victim. The guy who wrote the tweet is responsible for that tweet, isn't he?
He is responsible for that tweet, but he is our student. He is our student as much as Daniel is our student. And we have an obligation to all of our students. It's why we have values as an institution. And that, to me, is the mirror that we've needed to look at ourselves in, is what can we do? And that's some of the steps that we'll be taking. You know, one of my great concerns is it's very, very easy that this student could have gone through our institution, never seen a faculty member of color. My table, my leadership table, half of the folks around it are individuals of color. That cannot be said in our classrooms.
Yeah, looking at the broader numbers here, it's total faculty, the latest full year data, 802 faculty. Only 7% of the faculty is black, while 20% of the students are black. Mm-hmm. So significantly underrepresented on the faculty. That is also true for Hispanic and Latino students. 9% of students at MCC are Hispanic and Latino, but only 3% of the faculty. So, and the overall white student population is 61.5%, but 85% of the faculty is white. And that is something that, Dr. Kress, you're going to aim to change.
Absolutely. I think Professor Brantley wanted to jump into it.
Yeah, please.
You know, Dr. Kress, you posed a really good question. Where did we fail our students? And I can tell you where we failed. We failed when the genocide of indigenous people in this country started. Because right clear there was a tone that was set, you know, that these people are not going to be equal. And we see it in our sister nations in Australia. In the Constitution, the Aboriginal folks are not even listed. And as a matter of fact, their first prime minister says that there is no equality among the races. And we would be remiss if we didn't think that any of the men and women that founded Australia were that much different from the folks who founded this nation. Where did we fail? We're talking about issues of the Supreme Court. I mean, that doesn't really say a whole lot for me. You know, and that's not, and I would like to say this, I am not anti-government in any way, shape, or form, but I will speak the truth in my existence. The Supreme Court has failed me a number of times. You know, as I stated yesterday, my family, I see the struggles. When I'm in the South, I see people, black men and women, still saying yes, sir, and yes, ma'am to people because it's been such a part of their life. So when I see this word, this slur that this person used, it has a different feeling to me. All I can think of as a faculty member is I am failed on a daily basis by the federal government, by state government, and by local government, and I do not expect that from where I work because we're so much better than that. And I hear a lot of play on words that free speech, okay, what about these students? You take their black money. You take their international money. What about their feelings? So, and this is where it becomes somewhat poisonous. Even our good folks in this country, we all have a colonized mind as a result of how our nation was founded and started. And that includes our white folks, too, good folks. But they may not necessarily know that they're being casually racist. They may not necessarily know that they're being they're excluding people. We had the forums this week, but I thought to myself, it's not a punishment for the young man to be here. He needs to see how he's making people feel. You need to hear that students don't feel safe on campus. I'm currently being escorted to my classes by students because they do not feel that I am safe on campus. And this is unacceptable that they even have this thought process. I was called in my class Monday a racist by a white student. I was called a racist and that I was race baiting. This person felt emboldened enough to say this in the classroom, and it was an amazing feeling when my students, all white, black, and international, looked at that student and said, no, you are wrong. But this student exists, and we can't behave as if this person's words and this action isn't going to cause any follow-up going forward. You know, it's a really a matter of lived experience, you know. I remember my grandfather going home with him and seeing the N-word plastered across his home and having to wash that off. I have images of my family from Kodak, shout out to Kodak, but they were images of my family when they were slaves. And when I look at this image, when I see so many of our brown students on campus who are lost, we have a Holocaust and genocide memorial that we have on campus every year, and we place these flags outside, and I never see any flags for any of the Africans who died as a result of World War II. And I am alarmed by this because our faculty members allow this to occur. My department chair forwarded an email, and we all communicated over the weekend, and she sent this to a network of department chairs, and there were still department chairs who chose not to share it. They simply chose not to share it, and that is a problem. That is a major problem that we cannot face. This is one incident of so many. This just happens to be the one that makes the news. I am not bashing my job because I love it, but I will say that we all deserve better. And that's why we're all here working and talking and having these conversations.
Can I just I just want to ask one follow-up for DeMario, because I think he's raising, and you're hearing DeMario Brantley, who's a sociology professor and Latin American Academy fellow at MCC. And, you know, DeMario, in many ways, I feel like it's important for me as a white male talk show host to try to talk less and listen more in these kinds of issues. I do. When I think of your concern, when you hear Dr. Kress say the Supreme Court has kind of weighed in on this, mm-hmm. and that's the framework in which we're operating, mm-hmm. That and you say that is technically true, but mm-hmm. to your lived experience, that's not good enough. I also think of the people who work on free speech matters, the people who work not just in activism, but also in the law. And I think what they might say is they hear the hurt that you have, but they would say, let's just take this one. And by the way, it's Will Forberg is the name of the person who wrote this. I'm not trying to hold his name back for anybody who was worried about that. But let's take Mr. Forberg's tweet. We could say, you're off campus, you're gone, you know, you're a loser, you're out of here. That is not our way. And he sort of stomps off campus, goes somewhere else, but takes that viewpoint with him. Mm-hmm. We don't allow his viewpoint to be heard. And that's it. And then everybody goes on with their day. Or what you've seen is a mobilization. And you said in your classroom, when you were called a race baiter, it wasn't just students of color who stood up. There were white students who stood up and defended
you,
right? So what the idea would be that free speech, the best way to counter ugly speech is with more speech, and not just from voices of color, but from real allies. And maybe that's the way to eventually reach a Will Forberg or people like him mm-hmm. who hold these views and say, well, we have to stand up unified. And especially people in privilege have to get off the sidelines, mm-hmm. but speech has to counter speech. How would you respond?
I would agree. My response, I would never want that student expelled from the college okay. because he is entitled to get an education here. We're not in the business of changing people, but we are in the business, however, of transforming thought processes. I felt like this was a missed opportunity. Perhaps if that student attended, I had my classes attend because this is important for them to see. They have brown friends and they see their friends when they're happy, but are you there for your friends when something like this happens, or do you simply tell them to hush? You know, I'm thinking hashtag all lives matter. Where were you when slavery started? I see Black Lives Matter everywhere. How is this Confederate flag any different from a Black Panther Party? We got our whole free lunch program from the Black Panther Party, and this Confederacy has done nothing but cause hate. It's treasonous. It's disgusting, and it's absolutely un-American. I think we missed many opportunities to actually include that student in these conversations, to have a conversation with him. As a brown faculty member on this campus, we don't see each other a lot, and let's just be realistic. Many of our students come to Monroe County with an ill-perceived conception of people of color. In an interaction with a student, a faculty member is talking with this student about becoming a social worker, and she has to take a course in an urban studies program, which is located at our then downtown Damon campus. And the student said, "I have to take the course downtown. Isn't it sketchy down there?" Now, this is alarming because this Will Forberg was a criminal justice major. And we cannot simply act as if this is a coincidence with all of these shootings that have gone on in this country with unarmed brown people. A 14-year-old young girl earlier this summer hacked her Uber driver to death in a car. Those police arrested her with this knife in her hand. A white man traveled from Washington, D.C. and made his way to New York City with one purpose in mind, to kill black people. And we infantilize, we in many ways trivialize the things that particularly white men do. Saying that he didn't understand this is such an insult to me. He was well aware of what he did. Just the same way as with this mass shooting, and I'm talking about these things because they're all related. With this mass shooting, the news and media outlets showed this man's wife, her image, well before they showed his. She is Asian. They had no intentions or any desire to want to show his face. We do not want to acknowledge that this white guy is a terrorist, and that was an act of terror, because if we acknowledge that, it would have a lot of people having to second guess things about themselves and how they think.
All right, there's a lot here. I know the vice president wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, the thing that I was going to add on to and say that I'm in agreement with the president is that when we look at this particular incident, this incident has opened up a lot of wounds that exist on the college campus. And for, and just to sort of restate something that the president says, we have to look at MCC and say, where have we as an institution failed? Because it should not have been an incident like such as this one that brought these issues to the fore. And if it took a tweet like this to bring these issues forward, then we haven't done something that we should have done in the past. And that's where I say that you know, I'm in total agreement with the president that we have to look at our values and really say, as an institution, if it took a tweet to bring these issues up, then to some degree we have failed.
But, you know, DeMario brings up the question, well, this was a criminal justice student, and Kenya Downs of PBS reported just last fall on the problems related to bias within criminal justice programs. They went back to a 2006 FBI bulletin that detailed the threat of white nationalists and skinheads infiltrating Patrice and infiltrating police in order to disrupt investigations against fellow members and maybe recruit other people. Dr. Kress, is there more responsibility in the criminal justice program to try to examine bias, or is that possible?
Sure. And our program does include instruction on bias. It was interesting. One of the faculty members stood up at yesterday's forum and who teaches ethics in criminal justice and spoke about the evolution over time, that there was a time when she was teaching this course decades ago when no one ever mentioned this issue. And now it is front of mind. But one of the action steps that we will be taking is to review the curriculum in criminal justice. But it is not just criminal justice alone. I mean, the reality is the student took courses outside of criminal justice. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, and I let me reframe it sort of positively. Certainly we have failed, but where is this an opportunity? Where has this made visible things that we as an institution need to address in real ways, whether it's the curriculum, how we infuse our values throughout our curriculum, whether it's how do we engage faculty and staff and administrators in education around unconscious bias, how do we search for new faculty, how do we search for new employees, how do we bring our students into the community so that they understand that diversity is a strength, that equity is more than just diversity, that inclusiveness is more than just having the right faces in the room. It's actually engaging everyone in that discussion, everyone moving forward. To me, this is a true opportunity. It's a painful opportunity, but we're going to seize it.
All right, before I go to the phones for the rest of the hour, I just want to ask student body president Daniel Skerritt to just your thoughts on hearing this discussion on, you know, free speech. And yes, the Supreme Court's weighed in, but is this an issue that you feel, you know, particularly students and people of color in this country are not being respected enough on?
Well, in regards to what happened at MCC and with, you know, freedom of speech, I understand that. And I agree. Everybody has the freedom to say what they want to say, think what they want to think, more into it. It's extremely hard to change a habit that's been learned and lived over the course of decades. I'm pretty sure he's got to be at least like 20 years old. That's two decades of hate that you grew up on. And in response to that, you can say what you want to say when it comes down to it. It's just having the knowledge that for every action, there is a reaction. And more to it, MCC or the student body is more upset that essentially we're focused a lot on this student and what he said. And it seems like, I don't want to say we're trying to protect him. However, when we're negating the bigger fact that there's an entire larger population that is directly affected by this one person. So at what point do we realize that, okay, maybe, you know, if something's cancerous, you cut it out to save the rest of the body. Where's the initiative to, you know, worry about the rest of the body and save everything as a whole? So that's where I believe most of the students do have issues with, is we're focused slightly on the wrong angle to this whole situation.
All right, let me go ahead and get some phone calls, because I know a lot of people have been waiting to join the discussion. Sarah May in Rochester first. Go ahead, Sarah May.
Hi. So I am an MCC alum. I was on Pi Theta Kappa, and I went to school there for sociology. And I didn't know that he was a criminal justice major, but I can honestly say that now knowing that, I will tell you that criminal justice majors spend a lot of time in sociology courses, and in my experience have spouted off tons of racism. And I honestly am extremely disappointed in the institution that I once loved to death. And Ann Kress, when are you going to stop riding the fence on institutional racism? Because with your reaction to what has happened, and the lack of reactions when other students have gone to faculty about racist behavior on campus, some of which while I was there in 2014, nothing has been done. So please, get off the fence and stand up for your black and brown students.
All right, Sarah May, thank you. You want to respond to that? Go ahead, President Kress.
Sure, absolutely. I think one of the things we are looking at is what the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative has identified as structural racism, that there are many unintended consequences of policies and procedures and even contractual bargaining agreements that we've entered into that we now see the impact of, whether it's a small percentage of minority faculty or other challenges we face as an institution. Now, you know, it's difficult for me to address any of the sort of broad allegations she raises, but one of the things that we do know is that we have channels for reporting all of those activities. We'll be, as part of the action steps going forward, we'll also add another portal for individuals to report things that they feel uncomfortable saying aloud or reporting directly to others. So we'll allow an anonymous portal for individuals to report their suggestions, concerns, and issues. We take very seriously each one of these concerns that students bring forward. And I think that's been a hallmark, actually, of the whole redesign of not just our student code of conduct, but also our employee code of conduct.
And so if you want to read the special message from President Dan Kress and the follow-up, we'll post that on our various social media platforms so you can read it full. not only what they can say about this specific incident, but again, part of what you just heard President Kress talk about is this response on a number of fronts, and it's all part of there, and we'll post that statement if you want to read it. Here are a few more emails, and then we'll get back to your phone calls. Linda says, I applaud the professor on your panel for speaking the truth today without the gauze of pretty words. I'm also saddened that we cannot prevent hate speech. I understand that it gets into sticky territory because then who decides what is hate speech? But I feel that the people who are posting these hateful comments are outing themselves, and in one way, I'm glad to know who they are instead of wondering who they might be. That comes from Linda. This is from Teresa. She says, Evan, something mentioned briefly earlier in the show, I think bears repeating, the First Amendment does not endow anyone with the right to say any mean, vile, hateful thing that they feel like saying, and people are feeling empowered to do so nowadays, I think, because Donald Trump does it. Being mean and hateful is not a constitutional right. It's human nature. Thanks for another good show. That's from Teresa. Yeah, I mean, Teresa, and that way, I would say maybe human nature is to occasionally be that way. I would like to think not. I think we have to kind of teach it. But that's part of the discussion, is what people do and don't have the right to say. And Nissa says, you've got to be kidding me. This is hate speech. Considering our country's history of slavery and the horrific continuation of institutionalized racism, this is unacceptable. This is absolutely is having an impact on the community, on the college community, as well as the community at large. Students are weighing options of where to study. How could you possibly believe students will feel safe in MCC's care then? You want to respond to Nissa there briefly there, Dr. Kress?
Sure. And what I would say to Anissa, and I would say to all listeners, is you do not, again, have to look very far to see that every college, every university is struggling with this exact same issue. For whatever reason, there has been a coarsening of the dialogue, and there has been less dialogue and less discussion and more hate and vitriol on all campuses. One of the things that we're trying to do, and I'll reiterate this, is take this moment at MCC and turn it into something productive. Take something that could be incredibly destructive to the college community and turn it into something productive. The challenge that we heard at both open forums is that this tweet in particular was merely the starting point for other concerns that individuals had been feeling for some time. Now we need to respond to that. You know, addressing this one student and making ourselves feel better by doing that will do nothing to change the institution. Absolutely nothing. It is our shared responsibility, and it is my responsibility as the president of MCC to say, okay, we have heard you, and now we're going to do things differently.
All right, let me get Stephen in Rochester next on the phone. Go ahead, Stephen.
Hello. I would like to ask the MCC. I'm an MCC alum. Just try and keep it quick. I would love to see the school begin teaching institutional racism in Rochester to all students and hopefully to all faculty as well, so that people have a better understanding of, you know, the extremely long history of slavery and the less time that people have been out of slavery in this country. Very few people seem to realize that, and very few people study it. Thanks.
Stephen, thank you. Some thoughts from the panel on that?
I think one of the areas to address, and something that Dr. Kress and I have talked about, is changing the curriculum. I am a strong proponent right now of changing this curriculum. I wish to make sociology courses a requirement. How can we understand each other if we don't learn anything about each other? And when we bring our students here to the college community, it is our responsibility to really acculturate them to so many other things. They can't control what they learn when they're 18 and younger, but when they get on our campus, they actually can. And some students have an opportunity to learn. I'm thinking people don't even necessarily know what institutional discrimination is, and they would understand that. I mean, we have to also realize brown people just got the right to vote in the United States in the 1960s. That's not a long time ago. And so those kind of ideologies stick around and education changes.
On that subject, I just want to follow up, and then our other panelists can kind of extend on that if they want. But one of our listeners, Don, wanted to know, is it the responsibility of the college to instill morals in its students?
A part of our job as an institution is to teach students the material that we have in the class, but we also have to understand that when you're coming to college, it is our duty to give you values or to help you understand them, to help you understand ethics of society. This isn't a matter of what you're learning. This is a matter of being a human being and respecting other human beings. But in order to respect each other, how can we every MLK Boulevard in this country is in a black neighborhood. He's good for us, and we know that, but do these white kids in Parrington know that? Sojourner Truth is amazing for black women and for all women, but do these children in Hilton know that? We segregate in so many ways institutionally, and we don't even see it, and we all find ourselves falling into this pathway, but we can, and I would like to say this, you know, punishing that student, I do think it will make a difference, because people will see this, and it will send a message to those other students, because this will not be tolerated. I do not tolerate that in my class, and I make that very clear on day one.
Okay. Vice President Holmes, want to win? And I think all of our panelists want to win. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I would add is that it's not only important that individuals outside of us be educated, but I think that it's important that we as individuals take some personal responsibility of educating ourselves or seeking out education so that we understand that these things that we have learned, as Daniel said, for multiple decades, sometimes those things that we have learned other people find them to be offensive or hurtful. And so I think that it requires that we look within ourselves and really get to know who we are so that we can support others and better, you know, merely because something has become a tradition for us doesn't necessarily make it the right thing. And so it takes some really looking inward, not just looking outward, but looking inward. It's not always the next person that's really doing something that's hurtful.
Okay. Daniel?
I agree with that as well. It does start with self. And what you have in within yourself will essentially come out eventually. I do agree with President Kress when she suggests that we should all take this as a learning experience and see what we can do to move on. And that's both on an individual level and as a college. Just within the past couple of years, this isn't the first time this has happened. This has happened at Roberts Wesleyan. This has happened at Brockport. Unfortunately, we get big news coverage about it, and then it just dies off. You don't get a proper resolution to the situation. And I do believe that this is the opportunity for MCC to step up, set the precedence, mm-hmm. and let it known that we are not going to tolerate this, period. So not only should we take this as, you know, an individual experience, but as the body, the college body, and, you know, MCC has a lot of influence. We have this new downtown campus. We're being watched. This is the opportunity for us to set the standard and the way things should go.
Okay. This is an opportunity for us as a college to stand together. You know, I always think that when incidents such as this happen, and as a body we separate ourselves, we become weaker. And I think that this is an opportunity for MCC to continue to be the strong force in the community that it already is.
Dr. Kress, some final thoughts from you. We're down to about our last minute or so here.
So, you know, one thing I really want to stress here that I don't think we've touched on enough, and there could be a whole other show about this, is what happens when we use social media and we use computers to spread this vile, hateful ideology that if we were looking at someone directly and we were in the same room with them, it would change. Mm-hmm. We have lost the ability to sit across from somebody, even if you don't agree with everything that they say, and have a real conversation and recognize the humanity that binds us. That's really what we need to do as an institution. And the last thing I'll say is we as an institution have values. And if students don't respect those values at a certain point, they can't be part of the institution. Those are plain. They are out there. Integrity, excellence, inclusiveness.
Is that going to happen in this case?
We have processes. We have due process. And so we'll see how that turns out for this student.
Okay. So Again, I've pressed the leadership of MCC, and they've told us, I think, as much as they feel that they can. But I want to thank all of our guests for being here, and this is a discussion that will continue. I think Daniel Skerritt made a very good point here. You know, we've seen U of R has had instances. College of Brockport had some terrible things posted on one of those social media apps that I don't even think I know how to pronounce anymore, but just terribly racist things. And sometimes you shine a light for a moment and then you move on. Particularly people of privilege move on. Thank you for reminding us not to do that. And thanks for being here. Daniel Skerritt is the president of MCC Student Events and Governance Association. Great having you. Thank you, Dr. Kress.
Thank you.
The leadership of MCC has been here. Our thanks to Vice President Lloyd Holmes. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Demario Brantley, sociology professor. Great hearing your perspective, and thank you as well for joining the discussion.
Thank you kindly.
It is not always easy for everyone to come to the table and at least discuss, even when there's disagreement. You heard a lot of disagreement this hour, but we're going to keep having these discussions right here at the center of our community. Much more connections next time.